Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. The verdict is in on the civil trial accusing former Lemon Grove Councilman David Arambula of assaulting businessman Christopher Williams, a case in which each man claimed the other started the altercation and both claimed to be acting in self-defense. We'll have the outcome of that trial on our show today. Last month, we aired an interview with Bill Powers, an engineer with the Protect Our Communities Foundation, talking about concerns over the county's regional decarbonization framework, which would enable fast-tracking of massive energy projects in our backcountry. Now, the nonprofit group has filed a lawsuit against the county, claiming its decarbonization plan was based on false data and was written by a consultant with financial ties to SDG&E. There's a hearing before county supervisors coming up on April 5th on this issue, where you can speak out, plus online comments are being accepted until March 31st, and we'll have details today on how you can let your voice be heard. Another important hearing will be held March 23rd by the Alpine Community Planning Group, this one over the future of Loveland Reservoir, which remains closed to the public due to severe erosion and destruction of a fishing dock during recent heavy rains. This, after Sweetwater Water Authority drained the reservoir to Deadpool status for the first time in history. A San Diego State professor has died of Legionnaire's disease, and the campus is working with county health officials to determine where he contracted it. On March 14th, a nationally known architect will be speaking in Ramona about the possibility of having residents get involved in designing a co-housing project in Ramona. If you had damage from the recent storms, the state and federal governments have extended the income tax filing deadline. The official end of the pandemic emergency means CalFresh recipients will see a large cut in benefits, but some may be eligible to increase their monthly benefits by updating info on expenses that have gone up, such as utility bills or higher housing costs. We'll tell you how to get help on our show today. And we'll also tell you about a drop in natural gas prices on your next utility bill coming up. State Senator Brian Jones has introduced a bill to limit the placement of sexually violent predators in communities. Then we'll take you on the road to Lake Cuyamaca, which has been named the fourth best campground in America by the website CampSpot. On Destination East County, hear about an array of events coming up with springtime fast approaching, including St. Patrick's Day festivities, a butterfly jungle, Easter extravaganza, a harmonica festival, classic cruise nights, a charity golf tournament, an Earth Day fair, coyote music festival, spring garden festival, vintage alpine, and more. On Crime Beat, hear how stealing a motorcycle without a valid registration led to the thief caught in Lakeside being busted for drug possession and more. Plus, hear how answering an ad for a free boat resulted in a motorist ending up sentenced for manslaughter after a trailer hitch came loose and killed a mother of two in Hamul. We'll have some national news stories also today, including evidence emerging in a defamation case filed against Fox News by Dominion Voting Systems, which proved that Fox commentators knowingly lied about a stolen election, which Fox CEO Rupert Murdoch admitted under oath was a crazy conspiracy theory. From Public News Service, hear about a Department of Justice report on an infamous shooting, why China poses a growing threat, and conflicting theories within the federal government on the origin of the COVID-19 virus. From California News Service, hear about a program that AARP is holding for seniors on climate change. And finally, if you rode the trolley in East County during the second half of last year, you may have been exposed to tuberculosis or TB. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
A jury has found former Lemon Grove Councilman David Arambula and the city of Lemon Grove not liable for assault and battery in a civil lawsuit filed by Christopher Williams. The case centered around an evening at Arambula's home in July 2017, which ended in violence. A mutual acquaintance, Taisha Brown, set up the get-together, which Williams said was to discuss his pending medical marijuana dispensary application, but Arambula said he was told the meeting was merely to discuss bringing new business investment to the city. Williams claimed they discussed the dispensary and that Arambula pressured him to bring in a partner, but that he refused. Arambula denied those claims and said when Williams brought up the dispensary, he declined to discuss the pending application. The trial brought out some troubling details. Williams claiming that Arambula went skinny dipping in his pool and hurled a glass against a wall later in anger. Arambula claimed Williams was dancing suggestively with Mayor Raquel Vasquez, who was present for part of the evening but left before the violence occurred. The mayor said she felt uncomfortable and that both men had had too much to drink. Taisha Brown, who was also present but left before the altercation, did not testify. The mayor described the evening as a social evening, not an official city meeting. In her deposition, which was not presented in court, Brown stated that she was afraid of Arambula and had previously seen him intoxicated and wanting to fight. She characterized him as angry the evening of the altercation and said he did throw a glass against the wall and that she took a video of him swimming naked in the pool, but the jury never heard her testimony. The jury did hear conflicting testimony by Williams regarding whether his dispensary application was discussed and for how long, as well as contradictory statements on how much he drank. Arambula also contradicted himself on how much he drank and on how much he weighed at the time of the incident. Each side accused the other of fabricating evidence and embellishing details. On the night of the altercation, after the others left, Williams returned for his cell phone. He said Arambula let him inside and cracked a joke, then assaulted Williams unprovoked. Williams said he was struck with a bottle in the face, punched, and bitten on his arms, resulting in hospitalization for injuries, including a facial cut that needed stitches and a broken rib. Photos of his injuries were shown to jurors. Arambula claimed Williams grabbed his collar and threatened him, then put him in a chokehold and punched him repeatedly. Photos of Williams' hands showed no bruising, though Arambula reportedly had faint bruising on his chest, according to Arambula's then-fiancé. Arambula claimed he acted in self-defense, an argument that the jury ultimately believed. The jury also found the city not liable. No damages were awarded. Attorneys for Arambula and the city declined to comment after the trial. Williams' attorney, Corey Briggs, told East County Magazine, "We respect the jury's verdict, but the verdict doesn't change the truth." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Last month, we interviewed Bill Powers with the Protect Our Communities Foundation about his concerns over San Diego County's Regional Decarbonization Framework, a plan that could fast-track massive wind and solar projects in our backcountry, potentially waiving environmental review. Now, the organization has filed a lawsuit against the county and against the University of California, which got a no-bid contract for consultant David Victor to author the county's decarbonization report. The lawsuit contends that the report's conclusions are skewed toward utilities' interests, not consumers, based on flawed data, and that Victor's financial ties to the utility industry, including SDG&E, were not disclosed. The county's report concluded that building huge wind and solar projects in remote areas, along with lots of power lines to transmit power to San Diego, would be the cheapest and fastest way to produce clean electricity. But the report left out the $3.9 billion cost to build all of those transmission lines. If that money had been included, the lawsuit says the results would have flipped, showing that solar on rooftops and parking lots would be cheaper, faster, and without the damage to the environment and communities that industrial-scale energy projects can cause, even green projects. Building massive projects requires scraping off acres of topsoil, destroying wildlife habitat. Wind turbines locally have burst into flames, and wind turbines have collapsed and thrown blades off, weighing many tons. The turbines are 500 feet tall or higher, higher than any skyscraper downtown, and the fast-whirling blades kill hawks, eagles, and other birds, among other problems. So how can you speak out about this? Comments on the Regional Decarbonization Framework or RDF, can be submitted online through March 31st at engage.sandiegocounty.gov/RDF. Again, that website is engage.sandiegocounty.gov/RDF. In addition, county supervisors will be holding a hearing on the Regional Decarbonization Framework proposal on April 5th. Concerned residents are encouraged to come speak at the meeting or testify from a remote location. You can also call, email, or write to county supervisors to share your views on the Regional Decarbonization Framework, a policy that could have major impacts on communities across San Diego's rural, mountain, and desert communities. The County of San Diego and UCSD do not comment on pending litigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. Loveland Reservoir near Alpine remains closed to public access for fishing, hiking, and recreation since storms in January destroyed the floating fishing dock and caused severe erosion. The damage occurred after Sweetwater Water Authority drained the lake to an unprecedented deadpool status, killing off fish and destroying habitat. Even after January's heavy storms, Sweetwater again drained the reservoir, angering recreational enthusiasts and environmentalists. The Alpine Community Planning Group will hear a presentation by Sweetwater on the current and future state of Loveland Reservoir on Thursday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. Friends of Loveland Reservoir, a group formed to advocate for restoring the lake, is urging community members to come to the meeting and speak on the importance of saving the reservoir. The group notes that the U.S. Forest Service previously partnered with Sweetwater to, quote, provide public fishing access, according to a sign still posted at the closed reservoir. Sweetwater gave the U.S. Forest Service land near Descanso to expand habitat in Cleveland National Forest, and in exchange, the Forest Service gave Sweetwater land near Loveland Reservoir to improve public fishing access and benefit the community. Residents are asking Sweetwater, federal, and local officials to make sure that those promises to the community are honored, not broken. The Alpine Community Planning Group meeting will be held at the Alpine Community Center, and again, that's on March 23rd at 6 p.m.
Michael Buono, a professor at San Diego State University, has died of Legionnaire's disease. He was a faculty member in the School of Exercise and Nutritional Science and had been with SDSU for 4 decades. Buono contracted Legionnaire's disease last month, which resulted in closure of the Exercise and Nutritional Sciences building since February 13th. The campus has not disclosed where Buono contracted the illness, but he was the only person on campus confirmed to have the illness. The university has been working with the county's Health and Human Services Agency to identify the potential source. Legionella bacteria, which causes Legionnaire's disease, can be found naturally in fresh water, but can also grow and spread in water systems such as fountains, hot water tanks, and hot tubs, according to the California Department of Public Health. Legionnaire's disease, also called Legionella pneumonia, is severe and often requires hospitalization. It can be treated with antibiotics, but can be fatal in some cases. Symptoms may include fever, cough, shortness of breath, chills, headaches, muscle aches, nausea, and confusion. Buono served as an associate professor and assistant professor before becoming a full professor. He has also served as co-scientific director of the Reeves Steele Research Foundation Laboratory in San Diego and as a physiology instructor for the Physician Assistant Program at the Naval School of Health Science at Balboa Hospital. In describing his teaching philosophy, Buono wrote, "As an educator, I value creative thinking almost as much as content mastery. I want students to value their own ability to think creatively, and I encourage them to use novel ways to demonstrate their knowledge." In a joint statement, education leaders at SDSU said, "The world and our SDSU community won't be the same without Dr. Buono. Our hearts go out to his family, friends, colleagues, and the many students whose lives he touched through his decades of teaching and mentorship." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
There are so many social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. They save lives. It's matchingdonors.com, linking organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 22 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant. Most of them are waiting for kidneys. If you've considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Co-housing is about living the good life while using less of the Earth's resources and having a good time doing it. So says Charles Durrett, a leading architect in the field of sustainable communities and co-housing. On March 16th, Durrett will be hosting a public presentation at the Ramona Community Center on the future of this innovative housing concept with a focus on the potential for a new co-housing community in Ramona. You're invited to come and be part of planning a sustainable community and co-housing in Ramona. Co-housing communities are custom neighborhoods that combine full, yet efficiently designed private homes with extensive community facilities. This results in some of the most socially and environmentally sustainable neighborhoods in North America. The future residents are involved from the beginning of the project, acting as co-developer and co-designer, so the houses and the community as a whole ultimately reflect their real needs and priorities, not those of a typical developer. Durrett is also an author and an advocate for affordable, socially responsible, and sustainable design. He has designed over 60 successful co-housing communities in California and across North America. His work has been featured in Time Magazine, The New York Times, San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Post, Architectural Record, The Wall Street Journal, The Economist, and a wide variety of other publications. You can learn more about co-housing and sustainable communities at cohousingco.com. That's cohousingco.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego County residents, along with residents in most other California counties, can delay filing their state and federal tax returns until October 16th if you were impacted by the recent winter storms. Governor Gavin Newsom says, as communities across the state continue recovering from the damage caused by the winter storms, California is working swiftly to help recovering Californians get back on their feet. The state is aligning with the Biden administration and extending the tax filing deadline in addition to the tax relief announced earlier this year. Those with storm damage can also claim a deduction for disaster loss. The tax relief applies to individual income tax returns that would normally be due April 18th, as well as to quarterly estimated tax payments that would have been due on January 17th and April 18th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Pandemic emergency allotments through CalFresh have ended, resulting in a significant hit on the grocery purchasing power of many San Diego households during a time of soaring grocery store prices. But those who are affected may be able to increase their monthly benefit amount by updating household expenses on record with the County of San Diego, and the San Diego Hunger Coalition can help you. During the pandemic, the federal government implemented a temporary increase to SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, known as CalFresh here in California. The last emergency allotments will be deposited on March 26th. The effects on individuals and families in San Diego County experiencing nutrition insecurity will vary depending on your income, household size, and other factors. Households will see reductions in their CalFresh benefits between $95 and $250 a month. As of June 2022, that's last year, nearly one in four San Diego County residents were nutrition insecure or unable to pay for three healthy meals a day. Nutrition insecurity rates were also higher in populations of color, including the Hispanic, Latino, Black, and Indigenous communities. The end of emergency payments will worsen financial hardship among San Diegans and increase the demand on services from already overburdened food assistance resources, such as food banks and food pantries, especially since many households are not receiving the full amount they are eligible for, experts say. This critical help for families in need also comes amid rampant inflation and skyrocketing grocery prices. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, grocery store prices were up 11.3% since January of 2022. The ending of emergency benefits equates to 7.7 million fewer meals per month throughout San Diego County. According to the Hunger Coalition, the communities that will lose the most support within the county of San Diego are Chula Vista, which will lose 1 million meals, followed by El Cajon, which will lose 752,000 meals. Other hard-hit communities include City Heights, Encanto, and College Grove. The San Diego Hunger Coalition leads a network of trained community-based organizations, healthcare providers, and other nonprofits that can help people on CalFresh ensure that they're receiving the maximum benefits for which they are eligible. CalFresh households can connect with San Diego Hunger Coalition partner agencies or the county directly to boost potential benefit amounts for CalFresh recipients. How? By voluntarily updating case information, such as any increase you've had in housing costs, dependent care costs, medical deductions, and utility bills, which we know have gone way up. If you need help to learn if you're eligible for higher benefits and to update your CalFresh information, you can visit sandiegohungercoalition.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Senate Minority Leader Brian Jones has introduced Senate Bill 832, SAFE Act, or Sexually Violent Predator Accountability, Fairness, and Enforcement Act, along with a bipartisan group of co-authors. The measure aims to prevent the state from continuing to try to secretly dump sexually violent predators, or SVPs, in unsuspecting communities throughout the state. East County has had more SVP placements than any other region in San Diego County over the objections of residents concerned about their family's safety. Jones says that state hospital officials have tried to duck their responsibility by giving vendors such as Liberty Healthcare too much targeting regions such as East and North County for placement of SVPs in neighborhoods with children. Jones recently requested an audit of Liberty. Now, the SAFE Act would require transparency in the SVP placement process, force state officials to own up to those decisions, and make public safety the highest priority, according to Jones. Specifically, SB 832 would make public safety the highest criteria of any potential placement of a sexually violent predator, require Department of State hospitals to take ownership by approving any placements before the vendor can sign any leases for placement locations, mandate the director to publicly report annually how many SVPs are in each county and in which supervisorial district, and require the Department of State Hospitals, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and CAL FIRE to assess all land under their control and report to the governor and legislature any inventory of facilities that could be used to house SVPs, as previous administrations have done historically. The bill, if enacted, would also prevent an SVP from being placed within 5 miles of a federally recognized Indian country. San Diego County has 19 Native American reservations, more than any other county in the U.S., and nearly all of those are in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
CampSpot, a campsite booking website, has named Lake Cuyamaca Recreation and Park District the fourth best place for tent campers in America. The contest is CampSpot's second annual competition, which includes various categories from glamping to RV parks. CampSpot researched over 70,000 data points for its awards, including bookings, reviews, and other factors, to come up with its nominees. Winners were chosen by the public voting on their favorite campgrounds in America. According to CampSpot, Lake Cuyamaca is the jewel of the San Diego Mountains, the ideal mixture of adventure and relaxation. Whether you visit for a day, a weekend, or a two-week vacation, it's a place so beautiful you won't want to leave. Lake Cuyamaca offers canoeing, kayaking, a boat launch, and fishing. The only year-round trout fishery in San Diego County, it's known as an angler's paradise. There's also the Cuyamaca Pub, a recently revamped restaurant with lakefront views where campers can eat if they don't want to cook over a campfire. In addition to tent sites, there are also cabin rental available at Lake Cuyamaca, which is located on State Route 79. The Cuyamaca area is beautiful year-round, with fall foliage in autumn, warm summer days, spring wildflowers, and occasional snow in winter. A trail around the lake is a wildlife viewer's delight, where visitors frequently spot deer, coyotes, waterfowl, wild turkeys, and even bald eagles. Lake Cuyamaca is also a good location to pitch a tent to use as home base for enjoying day trips to Julian, a historic gold rush town, the Anza Borrego Desert, Green Valley Falls, Mount Laguna, and other nearby destinations. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gerald Stevenson.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Jonathan Getz.
With this week's Destination East County.
With springtime fast approaching, East County has an array of events coming up, including St. Patrick's Day festivals, a butterfly jungle, an Easter extravaganza, a harmonica festival, classic cruise nights, a charity golf tournament, an Earth Day fair, the Coyote Music Festival, Spring Garden Festival, vintage, alpine, and more.
Hooli Fest, the biggest St. Patrick's Day celebration in East County, will return after a hiatus, and this year the celebrating will span 3 days from March 17th through 19th at Hooli's Irish Pub and Grill at both the Rancho San Diego and La Mesa Grossmont Center locations. Plus, you can enjoy live Irish music, such as the Rebel Celts, host a pint of Guinness, and savor traditional Irish foods and cheer. For more information, you can visit hoolies.com.
The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in Escondido invites you to a spring safari featuring a butterfly jungle, which will be open daily from March 18th through May 14th. Visitors can wander through the hidden jungle aviary among hundreds of colorful, fluttering butterflies, have a chance to feed them, and learn how they contribute to our ecosystem, as well as help save wildlife in our own backyard. The Butterfly Jungle will shine a spotlight on the incredible local wildlife in the Southwest region, including San Diego, a biodiversity hotspot. Guests are encouraged to visit the Safari Park's native Nectar Garden and Baja Gardens. Guests can also enjoy live music, dancing, juggling, and strawberry-themed treats. Find more information at sdzsafaripark.org/spring-safari.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa will host an Easter extravaganza on April 8th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., filled with family fun, including a scavenger hunt for kids with prizes, face painting, balloon animals, games, and photos with the Easter Bunny. This is a BYOB event, that's Bring Your Own Basket. For details or to register, you can visit grossmontcenter.com.
Local and national stars will be playing American Blues Harmonica music at Spring Harp Fest. The Family Fun event, which raises funds to benefit music education countywide, will be held April 8th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa. The annual showcase includes local jams, competition among unknown players, and some of the best professional players in the music scene. Guests are encouraged to bring harmonica, hula hoops, cameras, bubbles, and dancing shoes. Food will be available for purchase. Locals can even compete to earn the title Best of the Unknown Players. Spring Harp Fest has helped raise funds to purchase 5,000 harmonicas for local school music programs and helps fund summer blues camps. For more information, visit springharpfest.org.
Opening night for Cajon Classic Cruises will be Wednesday, April 12th along Main Street in downtown El Cajon. The car shows will continue each Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. all summer long. For more information and a schedule, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Shelter to Soldier is a nonprofit that adopts dogs from local shelters and rescue organizations and trains them to become psychiatric service dogs for post-9/11 veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, and/or military sexual trauma. The nonprofit group will hold its fourth annual Saving Lives, One Swing at a Time golf tournament and dinner on Friday, April 21st, on the Championship Oak Glen course at Singing Hills Golf Resort at Sequan. To register or get details, visit sheltertosoldier.org.
For its annual Earth Day celebration, the Desert View Tower and Boulder Park will host a Boulder Fair on Saturday, April 22nd from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Festivities will include live music as well as arts and crafts, gifts, jewelry, displays of rocks and gemstones, healing herbs, gardening tips, a plant sale, organic produce, superfoods, tie-dyed products, a desert plant walk, and a kids' zone. There will also be Mexican food for purchase and a gourmet coffee truck. Desert View Tower and Boulder Park are located just off Interstate 8 on Inkapa Road in Hakumba Hot Springs. You can get details at Desert View Tower's Facebook page.
On May 6th, Cuyamaca College is combining several major events for a springtime extravaganza. The Water Conservation Garden will host its Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Guests can watch butterfly releases and children can join a pollinator party to hear stories and craft their own pollinator wings. The garden will also have specialty vendors, workshops, and food trucks. Coyote Music Festival will present local musicians in the garden's amphitheater all day, from rock and roll bands to singer-songwriters. In addition, Cuyamaca College's Ornamental Horticulture Department will hold its largest plant sale of the year in their brand new nursery. Plus, the Heritage of the Americas Museum will be hosting tours throughout the day. Find a full schedule for this May 6th event at thegarden.org.
You can savor tastes from 25 wineries, 3 breweries, and 20 local restaurants at Vintage Alpine. That's on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flin Springs. Vintage Alpine began in 1990, and it's now one of the biggest events of its kind in San Diego County. Over 500 people from all over the Southwest attend. The event, which also features relaxing live music in a garden setting, as well as a silent auction and opportunities to meet wine and food experts. All proceeds from Vintage Alpine are used by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine to provide services and programs supporting the children of San Diego. For tickets and reservations, you can visit VintageAlpine.com.
That's all for this week.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. An East County man has been arrested on multiple felony charges after he was pulled over by deputies from the Lakeside Sheriff's substation shortly before 10:30 p.m. on March 7th for driving with an expired registration. But a license plate check confirmed that the motorcycle he was driving was stolen. The driver, Michael Tesh, was taken into custody. Deputies, following up on evidence, obtained a search warrant for his apartment in unincorporated El Cajon, where they found a loaded unregistered gun and drugs, including methamphetamines and fentanyl. Tesh was arrested on felony charges for illegal firearms possession, narcotic sales, and vehicle theft, all because he stole a motorcycle without a registration. He was booked into San Diego Central Jail.
30-year-old Robert Thomas has pleaded guilty to gross vehicular manslaughter, and he's been sentenced to 4 years in state prison. It all started when Thomas answered an ad offering a free boat, a deal that turned out to be anything but a bargain. After picking up the boat in Hamul on February 25th last year, Thomas was driving a borrowed pickup truck on State Route 94 towing the boat when the boat trailer came unhitched and slid across the highway. It struck a vehicle driven by Jennifer Nichols, the wife of San Diego's interim harbor police chief, Kirk Nichols. Mrs. Nichols died later in a hospital, and her husband suffered minor injuries. Besides facing prison time in the criminal case, Thomas also faces a civil suit filed by Nichols' husband and their two sons. The lawsuit alleges that when Thomas approached a stop sign at Honey Springs Road and State Route 94, he was unable to stop due to brake problems. The suit also names the pickup truck's owner as a defendant for allegedly not maintaining his truck or knowing how it would be used. In addition, the Nichols family is suing the man who gave the boat away for allegedly not making sure the trailer was properly secured. The suit also contends that the boat and trailer were too heavy for the truck to tow and the brake components had been removed previously from the trailer. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
Fox News Network, LLC, the parent company of Fox News, is being sued by Dominion Voting Systems for allegedly broadcasting misinformation about voter fraud during the 2020 election. Dominion Voting is seeking $1.6 billion for defamation in the lawsuit. Fox News is also being sued by Smartmatic voting machines for $2.7 billion. Evidence presented shows that Rupert Murdoch knew that Fox News was endorsing misinformation about the 2020 election, including claims that voting machines were hacked to rig votes. Murdoch is the head of Fox Corp and Fox News, as well as many other media outlets in the U.S. and Australia. When asked under oath during a deposition if Fox News spread false claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, as Donald Trump claimed, Murdoch stated, "Some of our commentators were endorsing it." Murdoch also said in an email that election denial is, quote, really crazy stuff. Additional information shows that Fox commentators knew that they were spreading misinformation, as in a statement made by commentator Tucker Carlson on the air.
"We don't know how many votes were stolen on Tuesday night. We don't know anything about the software that many say was rigged. We don't know. We ought to find out."
Sean Hannity stated in a text message, "That whole narrative that Sidney was pushing, I did not believe it for a second." End quote. He was referencing Trump attorney Sidney Powell when she was pushing the idea of a stolen election. In a text message to his producer, Carlson wrote, "Sidney Powell is lying." Laura Ingraham said in a text message to Tucker Carlson, "Sidney is a bit nuts, sorry, but she is." These messages were revealed to news outlets via court documents and are just a few examples of people at Fox News knowing that the election was not stolen. Democrats Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, and Hakeem Jeffries, Minority Leader in the House of Representatives, wrote a letter to Murdoch calling that misinformation very dangerous. They asked Fox News to acknowledge that commentators such as Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham had been spreading dangerous misinformation and to make them stop. The senators stated in their letter, quote, "The leadership of your company was aware of the dangers of broadcasting these outlandish claims. By your own account, Donald Trump's election lies were damaging," quote, "really crazy stuff," end quote. Despite that shocking admission, Fox News hosts have continued to peddle election denialism to the American people. Republican Paul Ryan, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives, sent an email to Rupert Murdoch urging Fox to report truthfully. Ryan wrote that people think that the election was stolen because, quote, "they've got a diet of information telling them that the election was stolen from what they believed were credible sources," end quote. Murdoch replied by stating in an email, "Thanks, Paul. Wake-up call for Hannity, who has been privately disgusted at Trump for weeks, but was scared to lose viewers." Fox knowingly continued broadcasting phony stolen election claims in January 2021, fueling anger among Fox viewers and a mistaken belief that democracy was being stolen, just days before the violent assault on the U.S. Capitol in which rioters sought to stop certification of the presidential election results by Congress. The insurrection resulted in deaths of several people and injuries to over 140 Capitol police officers. Though Fox News broadcasters touted claims that Dominion's voting machines were somehow rigged to throw the election from Trump, in his deposition, Murdoch debunked his own Fox commentators. Asked by his lawyer, quote, "Do you believe that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election?" Murdoch replied, "No. also affirming that he had seen no evidence of any such fraud. Fox News has not reported on the Dominion lawsuit against its station and has argued in court that its lies are protected by the First Amendment. To win the case, Dominion must prove that the network acted with malice by airing claims that it knew were false. Although that's a tough legal bar to meet, attorney Lee Levine, who has litigated First Amendment cases for 40 years, says of the case against Fox, "I do overall believe that this is one of the strongest plaintiff's cases that I've ever seen," the Los Angeles Times reports. The legal expert concludes, "I have a hard time envisioning a scenario in which Fox wins before a jury." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The department has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that Louisville Metro and LMPD engaged in a pattern or practice of conduct that violates the First and Fourth Amendments of the Constitution.
3 years after Breonna Taylor was shot and killed by police officers in her apartment, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the findings of a civil rights investigation into the Louisville Metro Police Department, saying the city and its police department violated the constitutional rights of its citizens, especially those of African Americans. Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines spoke before the Senate Intelligence Committee during the panel's annual Public Worldwide Threats hearing. Haines called the Chinese Communist Party the most consequential threat to U.S. national security.
The People's Republic of China, which is increasingly challenging the United States economically, technologically, politically, and militarily around the world, remains our unparalleled priority.
Haines said during the past year, the threat has been complicated by a deepening collaboration between China and Russia. Florida Senator Marco Rubio also expressed concern about TikTok and argued the popular Chinese-owned video app is a national security risk which the country hasn't faced in the past.
The data, the ability to manipulate information, I would imagine that it's probably one of the most valuable surveillance tools on the planet.
Former CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield was one among various scientific experts speaking before the House Select Subcommittee investigating the origins of COVID-19. Redfield has long supported what is known as the lab leak hypothesis.
I still believe today that it indicates that COVID-19 more likely was the result of an accidental lab leak than a result of a natural spillover event.
The explanation traces the virus back to a medical research facility in Wuhan, China, which worked with coronaviruses. The House Foreign Affairs Committee held its first hearing to examine how the Biden administration handled the evacuation from Afghanistan. 23-year-old Marine Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews recalled the suicide bombing at the Kabul airport in the summer of 2021. As a result of the incident, Vargas Andrews lost an arm and a leg in the incident and had undergone multiple surgeries. He had harsh words for how the situation was handled, leaving him and others seriously injured or dead.
The withdrawal was a catastrophe, in my opinion, and there was an inexcusable lack of accountability and negligence.
Vargas Andrews says the attack could have been prevented, as he says the military had knowledge of the intended suicide bomb attack. Finally, on Wednesday, senators on both sides of the aisle voted to block the District of Columbia's updated criminal code from becoming law. The bill has been subject to heavy criticism as some of the provisions lower penalties for a number of violent crimes. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
After natural gas prices hit a historic high in January that resulted in a doubling of consumers' gas bills due to supply chain issues and severe weather, San Diego Gas and Electric has announced that the March natural gas commodity price has declined by approximately 83% compared to January. The typical residential consumer's gas bill is expected to drop to about $85 in March from around $225 in January. This is the second month in a row that natural gas commodity prices are going down. That's partially due to a drop in whole natural gas prices after an out-of-state pipeline was repaired, restoring service. In addition to lower gas prices, SDG&E customers will also see a break in their February and March billing cycles. Thanks to California Climate Credit, in February, natural gas customers received a credit over $43, and this month's electric customers will get nearly $61. Although the March drop is good short-term news for ratepayers, SDG&E is proposing long-term rate increases over the next 4 years. Public hearings are slated on those price hikes, including a March 23rd hearing in San Diego. Meanwhile, if you're struggling to pay your utility bills, there are some relief programs available. SDG&E has announced that it will fund a new $10 million program to support nonprofit groups that help vulnerable residents and is also increasing funding for its neighbor-to-neighbor bill assistance program and doubling the amount of financial support available for each qualifying customer from $300 to $600 per house. The utility is also expanding eligibility so that more customers can take advantage of the program. In addition, SDG&E has an energy savings assistance program offering free energy efficiency home upgrades to qualified renter and homeowners. There are also rebates in California for SDG&E customers to save up to $500 on purchase of high-efficient water heaters, room air conditioners, or smart thermostats. For information about these other programs to save money on your gas or electric bill, you can visit sdgne.com/assistance. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jacob Pamis.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Now, if you think this week's storms were severe, just listen to this. Back in 1976, Hurricane Kathleen struck our region, the most powerful tropical cyclone ever to hit San Diego and Imperial counties. With winds up to 90 miles an hour, Hurricane Kathleen dropped a foot of water on Mount Laguna and sent a wall of water 10 feet high and 40 feet wide rushing through the town of Ocotillo in neighboring Imperial Valley, destroying over 70% of the town. Another wave a mile high and 2.5 feet wide swept through Jacumba, demolishing a farmhouse there. The San Diego Union-Tribune said of the Ocotillo nightmare, there was no warning, just a sudden roar. The powerful storm killed 13 people in California and Mexico. It also washed out Interstate 8, crumbling the freeway and destroying a bridge at Meyer Creek, where a 600-foot-wide section of the freeway was wiped out, leaving a gully in its place about 40 feet deep. Eldo Sanders jumped in his truck to try and save people stranded in Painted Gorge out in Imperial Valley after hearing a call for help on his Citizens Band radio. He never made it. His truck was found overturned in mud, and his body was later found buried in a mud bank. Another resident of Ocotillo, John Patrick Riley, refused to evacuate his home. Rescuers from the Ocotillo Volunteer Fire Department found the 63-year-old man's body inside his home, which had flooded. An El Centro resident, William Mina, is believed to have died when his vehicle was swept off the Meyer Creek Bridge on Interstate 8 by a towering wall of water. Flooding and mudslides destroyed three bridges on the San Diego-Arizona Eastern Railway, ultimately leading to abandonment of that railway line. It smashed airplanes at desert airports and turned one plane on its nose in Yuma. A Salton Sea Resort area, Bombay Beach, was completely underwater. Authorities began referring to it as a lake. Most of the 14 cities in Imperial County were utterly inundated. Sheriff's deputies and the Navy airlifted residents out of areas west of El Centro, including an elderly woman trapped when water overflowed her bed. She was saved by sheriff deputies in a flatboat. In San Diego, the storm shut down a Padres game. Out in Imperial Valley, farmers suffered when at least 10,000 acres of sugar beets were wiped out along with many other crops. All routes out of Imperial County except for State Route 111 were shut down all at one time. 80 families were left homeless in Mexicali, and roofs blew off homes 600 miles south of San Diego. Hundreds of homes were destroyed across the region by the powerful storm, which caused $160 million in damage, ranking as one of the worst storms in California history. Alan Zangheim grew up on a ranch in Imperial Valley, and he recalls the flash flood that raced across the desert floor on September 9, 1976. The next morning, he remembers going outside with his dad, believing that the storm had passed. And then, he writes on his website, "We kept noticing some sunlight reflecting off the San Diego Mountains out towards the west. It was like a sparkle. My dad thought it was peculiar, and he said it looks like water. And we listened to the radio shortly thereafter and heard the flash flood warnings. My mom was scared and pretty insistent that we vacate the ranch, and we did. We returned to find out the next morning that a wall of water approximately 10 feet high swept across the Imperial Valley desert floor, wiping out the town of Ocotillo and killing some motorists who were unfortunate enough to be on Interstate 8 at the time the water came through. When we returned to our ranch, it was under 3 feet of water, and my dad's crops were ruined. It was due to this catastrophic incident that we sold our ranch and moved to the San Diego area," Zangheim recalls. He warns that due to the unique geography of Ocotillo, which sits on an alluvial fan below sea level, the same unfortunate events could very well happen again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Surveys show that 3 in 4 Americans older than 50 want to age in place, but climate change can make that difficult and expensive. Next Tuesday, AARP is holding an online community conversation about adapting to climate change. David Azevedo with AARP California says making homes more climate resilient may be more difficult for older adults on a limited income who lack emergency savings or the means to relocate.
The change in climate can force homeowners to make necessary and often costly upgrades, such as air filtration systems for areas prone to wildfires and smoke there, or replacing air conditioning units to efficient ones in areas that are prone to extreme heat.
Climate change can affect older adults' fitness and social life. For example, excessive heat or smoke from wildfires can keep people indoors, limiting opportunities to exercise or connect with family and friends, which increases the risk of social isolation. Azevedo adds that heat is the number one weather-related cause of death in the U.S., with a disproportionate number of victims among older adults.
Older people are more susceptible to heat-related illnesses due to weakened cardiovascular systems, pre-existing health conditions, and the fact that many prescription medications used by older people impact temperature regulation and hydration.
In 2025, California will launch an extreme heat advanced warning system to help protect the public. AARP partnered with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to create a disaster resilience toolkit, which is on their website. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. If you rode the trolley's blue and orange lines between June 31st and December 31st last year, you may have been exposed to tuberculosis, TB, and at risk of infection. The orange line services East County, running from El Cajon through La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and San Diego to Imperial. The blue line runs from Imperial south to the border area in San Ysidro. Metropolitan Transit System and County's Health and Human Services Agency this week announced the exposure for riders on the blue and orange lines during morning and evening commute times. 2 other MTS riders with TB were reported in August and September. Additional lab testing will be used to determine if there may be linkages between these riders. Tuberculosis is an airborne disease that is transmitted from person to person through inhaling bacteria from the air. The bacteria are spread when someone sick with TB coughs, speaks, sings, or breathes. Passengers who may have been exposed are advised to consult with their medical provider or contact the San Diego County TB program. Since TB is a curable disease with proper treatment, even if the disease is latent and not yet producing symptoms, a simple skin prick test or blood test can determine if you've been infected. Symptoms of active TB include persistent cough, fever, night sweats, and unexplained weight loss. But most people exposed to TB don't get sick right away. They may become ill months or even years later if their latent TB is not treated. Even people with active tuberculosis are often unaware they have the disease and may be contagious for several months before being diagnosed. Active TB can be treated with antibiotics. People who test positive for TB but who don't have symptoms should get a chest x-ray and talk to a medical provider, as they most likely have a latent TB infection. Taking medicines for latent TB infection can cure the infection and keep these people from getting sick. The number of people diagnosed with active TB in San Diego County has decreased since the early 1990s and has stabilized in recent years at around 200 cases a year over the past several years. But an estimated 175,000 people in San Diego County have latent TB infection and are at risk for developing active TB without preventive treatment. You can get more information by calling the County TB Control Program at 619-692-8621.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Activist San Diego, the nonprofit that runs this radio station, is proud to syndicate weekdays at 6 p.m., among other times, Democracy Now!
An ice storm in January caused major damage to KNSJ's antenna high atop Monument Peak on Mount Laguna, knocking this station off the radio airways. If you're listening to our show today on the internet live stream, please donate to help get us back on the air in San Diego and East County. You can make a donation at knsj.org. And thank you for your support of local nonprofit media. We represent your interests, the public interest, not special interests.